My next guests are two of the faces of Alloy Health. Along with co-founder Ann Fullenwider, they are spreading awareness about relief from menopausal symptoms. One was a leader in her field of obstetrics and gynecology for close to 30 years and is now the chief medical officer of this rising telehealth company, educating women by separating facts from fiction. The other one is co-founder of the company who wanted to empower women with the knowledge she spent years seeking to gain some relief after opting to have her ovaries removed. Together, they are taking on menopause, one symptom at a time. Coming up next on the 40 Plus Files, respected and trusted OBGYN, Dr. Sharon Malone, and co-founder of Alloy Health, Monica Molinar. Welcome to the show, Dr. Malone and Monica. How are you?
Thank you so much. We're great.
You're good.
Good. I'm so happy to have you on the show today. We have a lot to talk about, but I always start off asking my guests the same questions. So the first question is, how did you view growing older or aging when you were in your 20s?
Good question. I don't know that I thought that much about it, to be honest. I think I was probably pretty focused on what I was doing at the time, and it seemed fairly far away. As it relates to what I'm doing right now, of course, my mother did go through breast cancer twice when I was sort of, you know, pretty young. And so when I was in my 20s, I already started to be screened. So I guess there was a part of me that thought, you know, further out, there may be something that I need to deal with, but I also felt like I was, you know, kind of taking care of what I needed to take care of. So I didn't think that much about it.
Okay. What about you, Dr. Malone?
Well, you know what? I'm the youngest of eight children and the youngest by a lot. So between the oldest and the youngest, there's 23 years. And, you know, my mom died when I was 12. And so when I was in my 20s, I honestly felt like I had lived a life. I felt like I was in my 40s already. I felt like I had already been old. Like I had just experienced so much of life that most people didn't get to at that point, that, you know, I almost had to do it in reverse. I had to, you know, I had to be 50 to go back to feel like what it feels to be carefree. So, you know what, there are people who are in the world who are always sort of, they feel like they're old souls. And that's sort of how I felt like when I was in my 20s, I was never footloose. I was always like, okay, take care of you, be responsible, all of these things. So at 60, now I'm irresponsible.
Okay. It's really fun.
Wow. Well, that leads me to my next question. So I'll start with you, Monica. What was your biggest epiphany after turning 40? The show is called The 40 Plus Files. Did you have any epiphanies after you turned 40?
Well, you know what's actually really interesting? I did. So I had my ovaries removed when I was 39, kind of to prepare for 40. And I had been diagnosed with a BRCA gene, which puts me at a higher risk for breast cancer. And so I decided to, as a preventive measure, to have my ovaries removed, and it put me into menopause overnight, which was like a really very difficult time leading up to and after for different reasons, that some of which we'll go into. But I had been actually a stay-at-home mom for the majority of the time between 30 and 40. I had, when my older son was born, I did go back to work full time. And then when he was 9 months old, around 9 months old, I had the caregiver that I had hired to look after him while I was at work full time and traveling a lot, wasn't working out. And I learned through people in our apartment building, you know, that she was sort of mistreating him in ways that weren't acceptable to me. And so I had to let her go. And this is so pre-Zoom, I was not allowed to work part-time or from home from my job. And it was January 1st, I would have had 2 weeks to find a new caregiver and then not have another day off for the rest of the year. So I was sort of pushed out. And that led to 10 years more or less of me going in and out of the workforce, but really being mainly focused on my kids and raising my children. And when I was 40, it was clear that I wasn't having any more kids. My kids were now fully in school. And I had to think about, okay, what am I going to do now for the rest of my days? Am I going to just still be at home, and which was an option, or, you know, sort of an option? I mean, I really needed to also start to contribute to the family and take some pressure off my husband. And so I decided to go back to work. And I kind of had the epiphany at that point also that it was really hard to find the right job because I was sort of too old to start at the bottom, but I was too young to, and too inexperienced. I had taken 10 years off, so I didn't have the experience to sort of run somebody else's company or be higher up. And so I really had to think about, what do I need and what am I going to do and how am I going to sort of be deliberate for the next half? And that's how I ended up here, really. I did start another business before this because I realized that if I wanted to kind of create a new career for myself, I had to really create it for myself because no one was giving it to me. And through that, I also started to feel like, you know what, I really need to pay attention to me and what I need and, you know, and be more sort of, it felt almost selfish, but it really is the thing that has allowed me to grow and also maintain my marriage and a good relationship with my kids because I have my own thing.
Yeah, yeah. Great. That's quite an epiphany. Dr. Malone, did you have any epiphanies after you turned 40 or any of your milestones?
You know what? I think I had my biggest epiphany sort of after 50, to be honest with you, because when you're in the thick of things and you're working and you're having kids and you're putting one foot in front of the other for so long, you don't even take a minute to think about it. You know, you need to have the headspace to be able to say, is this what I'm, you know, is this what I'm supposed to do? Or am I happy? You know, happiness was not even, you know, a consideration. You did what you had to do because you had to do it. And, you know, you have three little kids and a job and, you know, a husband who means well, he really means well, but he also had a job that really couldn't really put him down there in the trenches with me. Mm-hmm. So, you know what, and I think I got the headspace when I was about 50. And this is a good thing, you know, and I think that even though I started thinking about, you know, whether or not this is something I want to do when your kids got to be old enough, it really wasn't until, you know, over 60, which is where I am now, that I really had the wherewithal to be able to act on it. You know, because there's also there's the reality of life. I mean, you know, you've got, you know, it's one thing, it's another. And even though in our mind's eye, we sort of envision this world laying out for us a certain way, you have to deal with the reality of it. And now that my kids are grown and semi-independent, where they're not, you know how that is. They are semi-independent. It's at least freed me up to do some things. And I think that the biggest gift I gave myself after, you know, when I was in that 50, 60 time frame was just to be able to say no to some things. You know, you feel like for whatever reason, you're either trying to please people or you're trying to do something as far as your job or concern. And just to be able to say, no, I don't want to do that.
Yes.
That's no, huge.
It is. Know? It is. No is a complete sentence. One of my former guests. Yes, absolutely. Dr. Darnese Martin. I always, you know, talk about that. She talks about no is a complete sentence, you know, and the older we get, the more we realize that. Mm-hmm. So I know we'll talk a lot about Alloy. The company that you started, Monica, with co-founder and Fullenwider, and Dr. Malone, you are the chief medical officer of Alloy. So we'll get into that. I know, Monica, you shared a little bit about your experience to undergo prophylactic surgery, opting to have your ovaries removed because you have what's called the BRCA gene, the BRCA1 breast cancer gene. Now, your mother was diagnosed with breast cancer.
My mother and her mother. So, and I, beyond that, I don't know, but I do know those two generations and both had it twice, you know, multiple times. So yeah, I'm pretty much as high risk as they come. Mm-hmm. I don't spend my days worrying about it.
Right. So once you had undergone the surgery, can you talk a little bit about what you began to experience shortly thereafter?
Yeah. So when you have your ovaries removed, you obviously by definition are not making estrogen anymore. And so you get sent into what's called surgical menopause, which I maybe heard the words before I had the surgery, but I certainly wasn't prepared for it. And so, you know, the doctor said to me, well, you certainly should take hormones, but he didn't give me a prescription, but he said, you know, given your age and, you know, you can't live this long without estrogen. And it's such a small dose relative to what your body naturally makes and has made up until this point, it's really very safe. So I did leave with that, understanding, but not again with a, you know, I still had to go to my gynecologist and get the prescription, and she had a different point of view. And so it just sort of, I didn't do anything for 6 months, but I also didn't sleep through the night for 6 months. I gained 20 pounds. I just, you know, and with all of which starts a whole mental cycle downwards. And, you know, at a certain point, luckily, a neighbor of mine from my building who was 15 years older and had been going through this, of course, or was going through it right then, saw me and said, are you okay? You know, you really don't look so great. And what's going on? And I kind of broke down and told her what had happened. And she said, you know, she took me under her wing and said, I'm going to help you. And from there, I got a prescription for hormone replacement therapy, but actually compounded hormone replacement therapy. And then that sort of started, like, which my doctors really didn't agree with. And so that kind of started me on a cycle of really trying to figure out what is it that is going to work? What do I need? I tried everything. I've had pellets, I've had testosterone, I've really tried it all. And so at this point, 8 years later, I'm not a doctor, but I'm, you know, pretty well versed in what are the options out there for women, what works, and why we need estrogen in our bodies. You know, that's just a biological thing. It's been made more complicated than it needs to be, but it's really a life changer.
Absolutely. Now, I would imagine that after having gone through the surgery, because what usually is a gradual process, you were thrust into it. So yes. Dr. Malone, can you talk about that? Because you are definitely familiar with perimenopause and menopausal symptoms in women, because you spent close to 30 years as a practicing OBGYN in the Washington, D.C. area. You've been featured on several podcasts. One of my favorite podcasts is the Michelle Obama podcast, where you talked about, well, the episode was called What Your Mother Never Told You About Health. So talk a little bit about those symptoms that Monica started to experience right away. And then if you can share with us why it was important for you to zone in on the fields of obstetrics and gynecology.
Sure. I think that the most recognizable symptoms that women associate with menopause are really the hot flashes, the night sweats, the sleeplessness, and sort of this sort of mood. And I say mood instability, because it's up, it's down, you're crying at a Hallmark card, or, you know, you fly into a rage for no good reason, you know. But those are the things that women sort of associate with menopause. But there are a lot of other things that come up that women don't tend to associate with menopause. And that is like just anxiety and depression. And, you know, some of the sexual dysfunction issues like vaginal dryness, painful intercourse, loss of libido, and even urinary symptoms that will come up, you know, and women, you know, the perennial problem that women complain about all the time is weight gain. And it really starts to take a different tone and tenor when you sort of enter this sort of perimenopausal window. And because menopause is a very individual experience, you know, because I said 30, you know, there could be over 30 symptoms that are associated with the menopausal transition. Mm-hmm. Each woman may have a different subset of those 34. You may not have all of them. Thank the Lord, you'd probably shoot yourself, but, you know, but some combination, and they, some come, you know, some some leave and another set shows up later. And it can be very disruptive. I mean, not only just to, you know, your physical well-being, but your emotional well-being, because it is hard to work. It is hard to maintain productive relationships when you are feeling this way. And I think that the bigger long-term issues that women don't really think about is that what does that chronic stress of sleeplessness do to you mm-hmm. over time? And, you know, it's one thing I can tell you, you know, having been an obstetrics resident and you know, a practicing OBGYN, mm-hmm. I could feel the difference between, you know, being up all night when I was in my 20s and 30s and being up all night when I was in my 40s and 50s. It's a whole different deal. Mm-hmm. The recovery time is less. And that's sort of, you know, what we're trying to get women to understand is that that's not normal. That's not healthy. That's not the path to anything, you know, good as far as longevity of your long, you know, your long-term health. And so addressing these symptoms as they come up and understanding that this isn't something, you know, you could do it for a week. You can't do it for 10 years, mm-hmm. you know. So this is sort of what we want women to be aware of, and to be aware of the fact that you don't have to normalize feeling bad, mm. you know, because feeling bad is a signal to you that something is really amiss, and you need to pay attention to that and not just get to the point where you just dampen down your expectations of what life is going to be. I mean, we're going to live, if we're lucky, another 30 or 40 years after we've reached menopause. And that's a lot to ask of women to not be their best selves for that long.
It is. Wow. Yeah, that's a lot. Now, Monica, and I know that you said that your neighbor kind of took you under her wing, but you often talk about having had 5 doctors in 5 years in an attempt to find some relief for yeah. your symptoms. What was that time like for you? And when did you finally discover relief?
It was really challenging. I mean, you know, I'm not going to lie. It was tough. I mean, to be honest, the compounded hormones worked, or at least the cream worked, that I was taking, but it was so expensive that I was really inconsistent with it because I had to send away for it and it was hundreds of dollars. And then I would get frustrated that, well, maybe I don't need this because it's hundreds of dollars. So, you know, I was never on a kind of consistent program. And so I'd feel great. And then I'd feel like crap. And then I'd feel great again. And then I'd feel like crap. Money was real. And we had 2 small kids and we're living in a, you know, expensive city and kind of struggling to make it. And so, and I wasn't working. And so I wasn't spending money like that, you know, so that was tough. And then the sort of, because, and now I understand it, but because doctors really haven't been educated about menopause at all. And if they are educated about, or when they're educated for the last 20 years, they've been hearing, you know, don't prescribe hormones. It gives you breast cancer, which has been absolutely categorically proven not to be true. But you go to different doctors and they give you a different opinion. And so, you know, I was really tired and stressed and feeling not myself. And so I would kept searching for somebody who would give me kind of the answer that I needed to feel comfortable and confident in the protocol that I was taking. And honestly, you ask, when did I finally really feel comfortable? And it was actually when I met Dr. Malone, who was able to break it down for me in a way that nobody had ever spoken like that, you know, and really honored the things that I was saying and listened to what I was saying and gave me rational, clear answers that I could hear and understand. And so at this point, I'm actually an Alloy customer. I don't do the compounded stuff anymore. It's too expensive. It's not FDA approved. It's not quality controlled. And I've learned that. And there are so many options that are. And I have tried also, I've tried patches. I've tried pills. I know that there are people who say that the patches can be safer because you don't metabolize it through your liver. It just goes through your skin. And I understand that. But for me, it was a choice that I didn't feel comfortable wearing it. I also was so young when I went through this that it really was a constant reminder of something that had been kind of a trauma for me. And so I didn't want that. And, you know, Dr. Malone always says, don't let the perfect get in the way of the good, or the good get in the way of the perfect, or
how don't let the perfect get in the way of the good.
Exactly. So, you know, everything in life is a push and a pull, and something that you need to really, it's not the only thing that menopausal women need to sort of use or be concerned with mm-hmm. for their well-being. There's mm-hmm. I'm very conscious about what I eat, for example, or I eat a lot of fermented foods. I make sauerkraut. I'm kind of like a health food nerd in that respect, but because I enjoy it and I really feel better when I eat well, and I don't eat junk, and I don't want to gain 20 pounds again. It's very hard to get off. It's taken me a long time. But you know, the more I move and the more the better I eat, the better I feel, the better I sleep. So it's a real continuum that we're all working on, you know, all the time. But the thing is that, you know, no matter how much sleep you get or what you eat, if your ovaries aren't producing estrogen anymore, you're not going to get it. It's not going to make it. And so, you know, we're being expected as women to, both by society and of ourselves, to really stay engaged at this age, to, you know, be at the top of our games, to stay married, to be good mothers, to, you know, all these things. And if you're not feeling your best, then, you know, it is a natural part of life, but women didn't used to live much beyond 51. So, mm-hmm. and they certainly weren't, you know, running businesses and doing podcasts and all those things. And so, you know, if Michelle Obama thinks it's a good idea, probably is, you know, she's got good advice.
Yes.
Right. You know what? Can I just say something? Because I think it's an important point to sort of understand why there's been so much misunderstanding about hormones and what women are to do at this time of life. One, there's not a lot of conversation about it. We don't know enough amongst ourselves. We don't have that intergenerational knowledge that your parents can pass to you. Your mom may be able to tell you about what this means, because the way that your mother may have experienced menopause is very different from the expectation that we have.
Yes.
But there is legitimate a lack of information, even amongst the medical community. And just like Monica's experience is not unique. And it also speaks to the hubris of other medical professions in terms of how they feel they can speak to women's health issues. Mm-hmm. And I'll give you an example. If you were to come see me, and I'm a gynecologist, and you've seen your cardiologist, and you've had a discussion about whatever is going on in your blood pressure medication, and you've seen an endocrinologist about something else, you come to see me, and I give my professional colleagues the benefit of the doubt in saying, well, you know what? You saw your cardiologist. And if that's what they think, I don't follow the literature in cardiology. So I wouldn't start messing with your medications. Then that is not true when it comes to issues of hormones and the discussions that women have had, even if you are lucky enough to find a gynecologist who can have this conversation with you. You leave my office and you go see your cardiologist, or you go see your internist, and they have a whole different story that they're going to tell you about why you don't need to be on this, and you shouldn't be taking this, and you know this is going to give you cancer. And to me, it's sort of like, we already had that conversation. Mm-hmm. So I have to do double duty. I have to educate my patients, mm-hmm. I have to educate my colleagues, and they feel perfectly comfortable because, and I don't know, we're not going to blame everything on misogyny, because these are women too that will do this as well. It's not just, you know, my male colleagues,
right.
But they will come in and switch around things and will actively discourage women from taking things that they that may do them, you know, like the world of good in terms of how they're going to feel and what their ultimate health outcomes are. But, and then the patient's in the middle and is confused. You know, well, this doctor said this and that doctor said that. But at the end of the day, there's a lot that's changed in the field in the past 20 years. And the study that came out 20 years ago that discouraged a lot of women from taking hormones and discouraged a lot of doctors from prescribing it has been debunked. It's been reinterpreted, but nobody has sort of kept up with that literature. So we're still talking about data and information that's 20 and in some cases almost 30 years old. So we just have to understand that just because you heard it and a doctor said it, you know, you need to have someone, you know, to talk to you about this from in an educated point of view and to also give you the opportunity to educate yourself. And that's sort of, you know, the driving force for why I joined Alloy. I think that, you know, at this point in my career, I don't have, let me just put it this way. Mm-hmm. I don't work for pharma. I don't have a vested interest in this drug or that drug or whatever. And speaking to what Monica was saying earlier, affordability is an issue, you know, and you can have the best, you know, most designer drug in the world that if it costs $1,000 a month to take, it's not going to get out there to the people who need it. And we don't have to do that in the field of menopause and hormone therapy. We have drugs that have been around for over 50 years. They're generics, they're affordable. So you know what? I don't want people to get caught up in the newest, shiniest, brightest thing because, you know, as I tell Monica all the time, don't let the perfect get in the way of the good because there are things that are out there. We know they work. They've been around forever. Not only do they work, but we have a pretty long track record of what even the side effects and long-term health issues are with these medications. So don't get distracted by things that seem new and shiny and bright when we have something that's quite effective, that's affordable, right there in our hands. And that's really the message that I want to get out there to women is that, you know, you don't have to spend $1 million. You don't have to have thousands of dollars of blood testing to decide whatever the particular tincture is that someone's going to go back in the back room and mix up with the mortar and pestle. You don't know what's in it. Mm-hmm. And I don't either. Mm-hmm. So you know what? You're better off and you will be better served by something that is standard, that is effective, that we have a track record with. Mm-hmm. And that's really the mission that we have at Alloy.
Absolutely. And you are definitely considered an expert in your field. So can you talk a little bit about hormone replacement therapy and define it for people who are listening, who hear that word and they are running scared?
Sure. You know what? It's unfortunate because it's sort of become almost a pejorative term. You know, people think hormones and they think, oh, terrible. You know, think of hormones the way they think of steroids, you know, that it's going to do something terrible to you. But hormones are vital to our, you know, our day-to-day functioning. Insulin is a hormone. Mm-hmm. Thyroid is a hormone, you know, cortisol, adrenaline, all of these things are hormones. So under that rubric, the only one that gets the real bad name is really the ones that are the female-derived hormones, estrogen. So after menopause, what happens is your ovaries start to decrease production of estrogen and progesterone, which are the two main hormones that we give after menopause for treatment of symptoms. But really, estrogen is the key hormone because for all the things that you experience and think of at menopause, estrogen really is the key to them. You know, it helps with hot flashes and mood swings and, you know, decreasing your risk of type 2 diabetes. So estrogen is just sort of the key. The progesterone, which is the second component of hormone therapy, is really there only for women who have a uterus. So if you have had a hysterectomy, you don't need to take the progesterone. You know, any reason for, you know, for whatever reason, your uterus is not there, no progesterone. So the key component is estrogen. The progesterone is there just to protect the lining of your uterus so you don't end up getting cancer of the lining of the uterus. And that's basically the two components of hormone therapy. And it's gone through a lot of different iterations about what we call it: hormone replacement therapy, menopausal hormone therapy, estrogen therapy. It's all sort of, you know, they're all names for the same thing. And we keep coming up with a different name so we don't have that negative drag that we bring when you say hormones, because, you know, we kind of have our preconceived notions about it. But that's it in a nutshell. Mm-hmm. There is testosterone is also a hormone that women produce, you know, premenopausally and even postmenopausally. Mm-hmm. But testosterone is a little bit more fraught because we don't have an FDA-approved formulation of testosterone for women. We only have testosterone preparations for men. And so that's a whole other conversation.
It's also crazy because women, I have learned, actually make more testosterone than they make estrogen. It's still so much less than what men make, but relative to, you know, the hormones. And also I just, can I add that one thing that I've also learned is why the estrogen is so important. So there are over 400 estradiol receptors in almost every tissue in our bodies, which includes our hair, our skin, our eyes, our bones, our heart, you know, and it's always thought of as a sex hormone, but it's really essential for the normal working of almost every cell. It's responsible for collagen production and for hydration of the cells. It's responsible for metabolism of different things. And so when you don't have that, that is why your hair starts to, you know, change texture and get drier. Your skin starts to dry up and get more wrinkled and crepey. You know, you gain weight, all of these things. And when you add some back, so not as much as before, but just enough to fill up some of those receptors to add mm-hmm. some estrogen to the receptors, then the cells can get back to working optimally. And it's kind of as simple as that. And mm-hmm. and that's why it works.
Yes.
So, you know, yes. Most people, I certainly didn't understand it. I had no idea that estrogen was so critically important. Our brains, so, you know, Alzheimer's and everything like starts in menopause.
Yes. So Monica, I know that you were really adamant about making sure that other women did not really have to go through what you had gone through. All right. Yeah. So you started Alloy with the co-founder Ann Fullenweider. Explain what Alloy is and discuss your biggest why for starting the company. You talked a lot about your own experience and so talk about that a little bit.
So I knew that I just wanted to solve this problem of menopause because it really stinks, you know, or stunk for me. And I hear so many people. I was talking to a customer this morning, actually, who was talking about the fact that she and all of her friends are white knuckling it. You know, they're just on edge all the time. And I totally understand. I was there as well. So I didn't really intend to start a telehealth platform. Alloy is a telehealth platform where we connect women who are in perimenopause and menopause with menopause trained doctors and the pharmacy. So it's a solution all in one. We do have a big content component, and we just launched a content hub, which sort of brings me back to my wonderful partner, Ann Fullenweider, who was the editor-in-chief of Marie Claire for the prior 10 years before starting Alloy and has been in the magazine world for 25 years as an editor and a sort of, you know, writer and stuff. And so she, you know, I met her socially and I approached her and said, I'm really thinking about, you know, menopause. We had a lot of conversations as women do when they, you know, even first meet, like you just go deep very fast and talk about all the things that are happening. And so we had gone there and I said, we need to bring this content and this sort of this discussion to a larger, wider audience, because women need to know that other women are experiencing it and are sort of going through all the same things. Like, it is normal but it's not necessary. You know, we're all going through it, but we don't need to go through it as deeply as a lot of us are. So anyway, one thing led to another, and she left her job at Marie Claire, and we started Alloy to, and spent the first couple of months really trying to figure out, which direction do we want to attack this from, from a product standpoint, from a content standpoint, like where are we going with this? And the more we dug into sort of what the cause of menopause is, and the fact that there is a simple, safe, effective solution that I have been taking for 8 years. Sharon also has been taking for many years. I mean, it really turned everything around. The only reason sort of not to start there, we felt actually compelled to start there because that's the place where there's the most misinformation, the most lack of understanding, the biggest disconnect between the people who need something mm-hmm. and the thing that will help them, And so we wanted to put that together. And that meant that we were forced into sort of healthcare and pharmacy and all these things that we've been learning about. That's been a really wonderful challenge and great opportunity to learn something new. So we've definitely been working hard at that and, have had all the ups and downs of entrepreneurship, and regulatory and all that stuff. But it's so important that women really get this information from a credible source, from credible people, understand that this is not our opinion. This is accepted truth, but from the North American Menopause Society, the American College of Obstetricians and Gynecologists, the major leading medical authorities in the world agree that the benefits of menopausal hormone treatment outweigh any risks, and that, it's really important. There are actually more risks for not taking it. Osteoporosis and fractures are a huge problem for women. Heart disease is a huge problem. Dementia and Alzheimer's, huge problem that affects more women than men and can be helped and prevented by taking estrogen.
Absolutely.
And And the other thing, Jaggi, that I would say is that the one thing that we don't want to get involved in mm-hmm. is this notion of it's an either or camp,
Right.
Mm-hmm. Because there are people who are like, hormones. And then there are people who are like, no, menopause is natural, and and this isn't a disease state, and that's not the argument we want to have, mm-hmm. because at the end of the day, all we ask is that for women to look at whether or not the risks and the benefits come out on the plus side for you. So if you're doing great and you don't have any of those 30 things that we were talking about, and you're not at risk and you're good, then I say, God bless you. Mm-hmm. Good. Keep doing what you're doing.
Right.
But your experience does not inform another person's experience. Just because that's how you had, went through menopause doesn't mean that it has anything to do with your sister or your cousin or your best friend. Mm-hmm. So you don't get to change someone else's mind because they may be having a very different experience. Mm-hmm. And that's what we're trying to do. And I don't want that we as women, we don't have to choose a camp and stay in that camp, because it may mean one thing for you in year one of menopause, and it may mean something else for you at year four or five. And you just have to be able to be flexible, to understand what your options are, and don't take things off the table because you've got these preconceived notions about whether or not this is a good thing or a bad thing. I think when it comes to experiencing menopause and hormones, you should come to it from a neutral place. Mm-hmm. If you need it and you're bothered, by all means, you shouldn't take it off the table. If you're not, and you're doing great with your exercise and your healthy diet and everything else that you need to do, then we're happy for you for that too.
Absolutely. And you always say something. You say that all women should be able to make decisions regarding their health and quality of life based on facts, not fear. And so that's what you're speaking to. So just explain the importance of this when women reach midlife and start experiencing life-altering menopausal symptoms, because I think a lot of women, they are afraid, and then they say, well, my mother and grandmother went through this, so I don't want to start doing something that might where I might have side effects or whatever have you.
Well, Okay, I'll tell you, there are two things, because if you have to say what's the biggest fear that women have, and you say what's the biggest impediment to not taking hormones when you are symptomatic and you feel like you could probably benefit from them. And I would say the numbers one, two, and three fears are the fears of breast cancer, you know, because every woman, I mean, I think we have done a very effective job in terms of educating women about breast cancer, screening, knowing that it exists. But that is sort of overblown in terms of what, you know, the things that we will do or not do based upon our fear of breast cancer. And I think to put that fear of breast cancer vis-a-vis hormones in some perspective for you, the if you took hormones, just say the worst case scenario from the Women's Health Initiative, not the newer data, but let's just take that because that's where most people are coming from. If you took the estrogen and a synthetic progestin that was in the study 30 years ago, even that worst case scenario, your risk of developing breast cancer on hormones is no greater than being 20 pounds overweight, having two or more glasses of alcoholic beverage a day, be it two glasses of wine or two cocktails a day, being a flight attendant and being exposed to certain radiation, and certainly no less than having, you know, that it would, it's far less than having a genetic component of breast cancer. But you don't fear, you don't, women don't fear getting on a plane or saying, oh, I can't be a flight attendant because that's going to increase my risk of breast cancer, or I'm going to skip my glass of wine, or, you know, I mean, you know what I mean? So in terms of there are a lot of different risk factors in there that, but we sort of got stuck on that. And the newer data says that that, you know, even that old data from 30 years ago is probably not correct. So if you have to say, what's the impediment? And we've got to get women to understand that breast cancer is a multifactorial disease. To, you know, it has to do with the age at which you've had your first child, whether or not you nursed or you didn't nurse. All of these things go into your environment, you know, what your diet is, all of these things. But we hang our hat on that hormones and say that, like, that's the cause of why you have breast cancer. And I'll give you a little bit of just personal history. You know, Monica has the, you know, the family history of BRCA gene. I have family history of breast cancer, but I do not have at least the gene that we are aware of. Because of all the things that are risk factors for breast cancer, my family has a lot of them. You know, we grew up in the rural South. Who knows what environmental exposures you've had, the kind of diet, being overweight, all of these things. So you can't say, oh, it's the hormones. It's not. It's a lot of things. And I think that the more we educate women on what those other risk factors are that you do have control over, that you can minimize, you can cut back on the number of alcoholic beverages you drink. Don't smoke, don't, you know, exercise regularly. And when you put it in that context, it's not nearly as scary as women would be led to believe. And I think that the other important piece of this is that when we talk a lot about, you know, we're a lot in the conversation is coming up about self-care. Well, feeling good and being your best self. I mean, I can't think of another, a better way to exercise self-care. And if you are, if you haven't slept in months and you're miserable and sex is painful and whatever, that's, you know, you're not exercising self-care. I mean, and if you want to go ahead and be your best life and be your most productive self at work, you know, and there's a solution for that. Don't let all that other stuff get in the way of having you not choose the thing that's going to make you be your best self.
Also,
the important thing to note about the study, also both the Women's Health Initiative and what's come out later, is that in even in the Women's Health Initiative, where they, you know, the headlines were worldwide that they saw an increased risk of breast cancer, that was not in women who had taken estrogen only. And what they've now since found by doing, there was a recent study out of the UK that's, that looked at 20 years of data, 500,000 women, every single case of breast cancer from the United Kingdom for 20 years. And the only increased risk of breast cancer, incidence of breast cancer, mm-hmm. came as a result of the synthetic progestin, so which is not what's used today and certainly not what Ally prescribes, which is a bioidentical micronized progesterone. So this is a synthetic progestin that was responsible for a slight increase in incidence of breast cancer, still like not so much that on any other medication you would even notice it. Mm-hmm. Right. And so there was no increased risk of breast cancer from any type of estrogen, whether it was bioidentical or what they used at the time, which is equine conjugated equine estrogen, sometimes or otherwise known as Premarin. But estrogen does not cause breast cancer, mm-hmm. period. Really wow. important to say that emphatically so that people can hear it.
Yes, absolutely. Both of you are just a wealth of knowledge. I want to ask you a couple questions before I get you out of here. So I'll start with you, Monica. What are some of the biggest advantages of doing what you do at your age, and what are some challenges?
I love doing what I do. It's so exciting to just have an idea and really be passionate about something and be able to kind of create something out of nothing. So put a team together and really work towards a goal is great. Was really, you know, came out of is a result of the fact that I had my ovaries removed, that I became an entrepreneur. I started a different business before this, as I said, and now this is my second time, but it's always something that I really feel passionate about and excited about. So having that ability to, you know, to get up and work with people who I love and work remotely. In the middle of all of this, I actually had a big move and moved. My husband is from Europe. And so we moved to the Netherlands and mm-hmm. renovated a house and did all this stuff. So actually being able to work remotely and sort of, you know, keep it all going has been, is really exciting and fun and makes me feel young and stay, you know, engaged and just like, I think the fact that also being this age and having sort of had so many experiences really helps to inform, you know, everything that we do every day and being able to relate to other women. And, so it's great. I love being able to talk to women like you and, you know, have these conversations and the challenges are everything that I just said just takes so much work and so much effort. And, you know, if we look smooth, we're really, our duck legs are, you know, really working hard under the surface, but, you know,
trust so that I know. That, yeah. Thank you. What about you, Dr. Malone? What are some of the biggest advantages of doing what you do at your age and some challenges?
You know what? And Monica and Anne have heard me say this 1,000 times, but it is true. I believe that there are no accidents in the universe. And if you had asked me 3 years ago or 2.5 years ago, if I would be doing what I'm doing right now, I would have said, you are nuts. You know, I got a good job. And you know what? I'm just going to stay here until I'm 65 years old and retire and call it a day. And, you know, and things happen. And I certainly could not have anticipated that this is where I would be. It may be the only good thing that came out of COVID, because the COVID break, you know, we had to close our office for 3 months because we were in a state of emergency here in DC. And that 3 month break was the first time that I ever contemplated not doing what I had been doing for almost the past 30 years. Wow. And it was just that little bit of breathing room that gave me that put in my head that maybe I could do something different. And I didn't even know what that thing was going to be or whether it was going to be nothing. And that would have been fine too. Mm-hmm. But Anne and Monica somehow, you know, they found me after, you know, and the funny thing is it's all serendipitous because mm-hmm. Michelle Obama and I, we did this podcast mm-hmm. and we did the podcast the way we did because we were in COVID and no one could go to a studio and we were all here. And we said, well, okay, well, let's just do it. We'll go someplace and we'll socially distance and do this podcast. So it from that those little moments in time sort of got me to the point where Anne and Monica even knew I existed. Mm-hmm. So I'm thankful for that. And that's another thing we can say, thanks, Obama.
Yeah, I know the power of podcasting. You are wonderful.
Yeah. Let me say this. I'm going to say one thing and I'm going to let you go because. Mm-hmm. But the good news is this, is that, you know, I'm 63 years old mm-hmm. and, you know, being able to pivot and find something else that you can do mm-hmm. as long as you feel good and you are still vibrant. There is no reason why you have to be stuck in whatever it is that you're doing. And this has given us an opportunity, all of us, mm-hmm. to look at the world a little bit differently and then to come up with a different way to approach it. And that's what I want to, you know, tell women. Don't be scared, you know, get out there, you know.
Why we love her.
Wow. Yes. You know, when you answered my next question, Dr. Malone, you already answered it. I always ask my guests, what advice do you have for women over 40 who believe that their best years are behind them? And you answered it. What about you, Monica? What do you have to lend to
them? I mean, I just wholeheartedly agree. You know, it feels so exciting to be this age and to be able to do like really work hard, you know, together and really make a difference. And there's no reason why you can't make any change you want to make and, you know, do what you want to do. Absolutely. It's actually so much better because you have so much more experience and such a bigger, wider network and, you know, breadth of expertise. Like it's a great time to dig in and get going.
It is. It's like fine wine, right? Yeah. So lastly, how can people get in touch with you? You want to share your socials, talk about Alloy, how people can log on, that kind of thing.
So you can find us at myalloy.com. It's myalloy.com. We're also on Instagram at Alloy Health and TikTok. We're you know, getting on that platform, which has been pretty fun. Twitter, Sharon has a great Twitter. Dr. Malone has a great Twitter account handle where you can, you know, sometimes really get her real point of view.
Sometimes I get going, but that's my Twitter is S Malone MD.
Okay.
At S Malone MD. You can find me.
Monica, any socials, personal
and
socials?
I have Monica Molinar is my Instagram, and the rest this is something new for me is really being, you know, trying to sort of get bigger on social. I'm a pretty generally private person. So, you know, that's been a stretch. Yeah. And it's exciting. It's interesting, you know, to put yourself out there in a way that, that we're all, you know, a lot of us are unaccustomed to doing. It's sort of a new world. And so here we are. It's fun.
Yes.
You get to meet so many more people.
I know. Well, I just want to thank you both so much for doing this, for being here. My listeners are going to be just really appreciative for what you've shared today.
Thank you.
And I'm excited about that. So thank you so much for sharing your 40 plus power with us today.
Thank you for having us.
Dr. Malone, Monica, and Anne are determined to help women take their power back and regain control of their lives. They are laser focused, tirelessly working to usher women into their happy place. To learn more about their personal stories and Alloy Health, you may visit the website at www.myalloy.com.
For more information about the podcast, send inquiries to info@the40plusfiles.com. Don't forget to follow the podcast on Instagram @the40plusfiles. You can also follow my blog at www.wordyprofessor.com. Until next time, 40 plus phenoms, keep on shining.